Merry Christmas, everybody. How are we doing? If you're just checking us out for the first time, thank you so much for joining us. My name is Stephen. I'm the lead pastor here. And our church for the past month or so has been in a series called Christmas at the Movies, where what we've been doing is we've been taking a look at different Christmas classics, stories that we're all pretty familiar with, like Home Alone. Any Home Alone fans? Elf, The Grinch, The Santa Claus. We've been looking at all these Christmas movies that everybody's familiar with and using those to highlight biblical truth. When Jesus preached, he used parables, stories, to highlight truths about God, about humanity, and about our world. And whenever anybody preaches at our church, we use personal stories to illustrate certain truths. And so in this series, we've been taking a look at different Christmas movies. But tonight, what we want to do is we want to take a look at a movie that many people consider to be the best Christmas movie of all, and that's It's a Wonderful Life. Anybody big fans of that? My dad made us watch it every single year. But It's a Wonderful Life is a story about this guy named George Bailey, who's a really good guy. He lives his entire life trying to give and serve and love his community, build up this town. But then one day on Christmas Eve, his uncle makes a mistake and it costs him thousands of dollars. And now everything that he's built up is at risk. It could all be taken away just in this one moment. And so he starts thinking to himself, what will my family think? What are our options? And he knows that they have insurance. And so he starts wondering, maybe I'm worth more to the people that are important to me dead than alive. And it's at that point that God sends an angel to speak into his life. Check it out. See, what George Bailey was struggling with was this feeling that his life actually didn't make any difference, which is a question that I think a lot of us have wrestled with at different points. And so the rest of the movie, the angel shows George Bailey what his world would have looked like if he hadn't been born. And on this Christmas, we decided to take that idea and ask the question, well, what about Jesus? What if Jesus didn't exist? What if Jesus hadn't been born? How would our world look different? In his book, What If Jesus Had Never Been Born, pretty apt title for this message, D. James Kennedy wrote about the historical impact of what would have changed if it hadn't been for Jesus, or what had the movement of Jesus started over the course of history. And he wrote about how things like hospitals were started by the church to care for the sick and hurt. Universities like Yale and Harvard and Princeton were started in order for preachers to be able to know the Bible and preach Jesus. Literacy and education for the masses was given to people who couldn't read, couldn't write, so that they could actually read the Bible. Codifying hundreds of never been written down before languages was done so that people could have their own Bible in their own language. Discovery and settling of the new world, that was largely driven by this idea of religious freedom. Benevolence and charity, that Good Samaritan ethic, was started by like the story of the Good Samaritan, pretty apt name right there, right? Higher standards of justice. We usually don't think of like the Ten Commandments as like, yeah, that's the thing I want to rally behind, but it's like a really good thing when a nation would rally behind, let's not kill each other. Like, that's a good law, amen? Like, even if you're not a church person, you're like, I like that one. Like, I'll take that one. And even things like a greater appreciation or an elevated sense of the arts, like music and architecture, were largely driven through history by the belief in God and the worship of Jesus. People like Mozart and Beethoven would write things to actually honor God. A lot of the greatest pieces of architecture, like cathedrals, I'm not a huge cathedral guy. We do church in a giant brown box. But cathedrals were originally made as this structure to bring awe to the idea of God, that this thing is big and it's glorious and it's beautiful, just like our God. But maybe you're sitting here and you're thinking, well, that's great that Jesus changed history, but the only thing I feel like he's changed in my life is he ruined my Christmas Eve plans, because I'm stuck here. So what if Jesus wasn't born? How would that have affected your life personally? Hebrews 2 isn't really looked at as a big Christmas passage, but it actually answers this question, what if Jesus hadn't been born? And in Hebrews 2, starting in verse 9, it says this: what we do see is Jesus, who for a little while was given a position a little lower than the angels. So when was Jesus made lower than the angels? You have God, you have the angels, and you have human beings. When he was made a little lower than the angels was when Jesus was born as a human baby on Christmas. Like, we don't think of, like, the huge implications, like, yeah, Jesus was born, but, like, what is the actual implications that Jesus came, God actually came to planet Earth? He stepped out of eternity and into our reality so that we could know God himself. And because he suffered death for us, he is now crowned with glory and honor. Yes, by God's grace, Jesus tasted death for everyone. God, for whom and through whom everything was made, chose to bring many children into glory. And it was only right that he should make Jesus, through his suffering, a perfect leader, fit to bring them into their salvation. This first part of this passage actually gives us the first thing that would have changed about your life if Jesus hadn't been born. You see, if Jesus hadn't been born, there would be no rescue from sin. Unfortunately, everybody, you're probably going to get one of these for Christmas. Hopefully two, right? But, like, all of us have that aunt who just doesn't believe that you could get this any time of the year on your own. So she makes sure on Christmas she's going to get you socks. If you're the person who gets people socks in the room, I'm sorry. It's not too late to return them. But we all have that relative who gives us socks, but the unfortunate reality about socks is that they get dirty. This is right after I play basketball, even indoors, no. But they get dirty really fast. And if you were to try to walk into your parents' house on Christmas with these socks on, your mom is kicking you out of the house. She's going, you cannot step foot in here until you take your dirty shoes off and your muddy socks off, right? Sin is actually really similar. That God originally had this beautiful intent for humanity, that we would have an unclouded picture of what human value is, of what a human life could look like, that it would be pure and that it would be connected with God. But sin destroys that image. It breaks that picture that God intended, and it makes it so that just like you can't step foot in mama's house when you have socks on like this, it creates a separation between us and a holy God. And so really the question is, what do we do about that? Like, I need this rescue from sin if I'm going to have a connection with God. So what do I do about the dirt? What do I do about that brokenness? And maybe you're thinking, well, why is sin such a big deal? What is sin? Sin is disobedience to God and selfishness towards other people. But what's the big deal? Well, it's a big deal because everything that you hate when you look at the world and you see pain and suffering and hunger and hurt and brokenness, those things that break your heart break God's heart too, but they are all caused by this thing called sin. That it affects all of us. So how do we get the dirt off? How do we fix that sin problem? Verse 14 of Hebrews says this: because God's children are human beings, made of flesh and blood, the Son also became flesh and blood. When? When he was a baby on Christmas, when he became human. For only as a human could he die, and only by dying could he break the power of the devil who had the power of death. You see, religion would teach that the best thing that you could do if you're this is just stop getting more dirt on it. And that's it. Do everything you can to avoid any dirt. And that's the best type of life that you could live, which causes people to live in fear of getting any more dirt, and they live smaller and smaller and smaller lives, not wanting to risk anything. I won't watch that movie. I won't hang out with those people. I'll just live smaller. I'll avoid all risk. I'll just stay in my little box away from everybody, and I'll tell other people who don't believe the same things as me to get away because I'm worried about their dirt getting on me. But what the Bible actually says is that God sent a different plan. He sent Jesus to live this life, free from the dirt, free from the mud, a sinless life, a life that would stand as a representation of what our lives could look like if we lived our entire life in connection with our Creator. But then when he died, he actually took our dirt on him, and then he gave us a new life, a new sock. I was going to say something about a pear, but it just wouldn't work in the illustration. I had so many puns that they just didn't work. So now I'm just going to tell you I had them. But Jesus brought us new life. Jesus didn't come just to make it, just to tell people not to get any more dirt on the sock. He came to give you a whole new sock. Jesus didn't come to try to make people live smaller, boring, tight, just small little lives. He actually came to bring you a new life. And the beautiful thing in this passage is actually says that he brought us into not just be cool with God, like we're on good terms, but we're left alone. He actually made it so that we're children of God now. That Jesus was the Son of God because of who he is, but then he made us children of God because of what he did. Hebrews continues and it says this, verse 15. Only in this way could he set free all who have lived their lives as slaves to the fear of dying. And this is the second thing that Jesus has brought us. If Jesus had never been born, there would be no freedom from fear. I saw this crazy chart. Gallup came out with this report, and it was all about people's mental health, reported mental health. Can we get that up on the screen? And it showed all these different groups, every demographic that you could possibly imagine, talking about the different ways that this year has affected their mental health. And every single demographic went negative this year. Men, women, rich people, not so rich people. I'm in ministry. It's okay. You can laugh. I laugh, cry. No, I'm just kidding. But so every possible, even like Republicans and Democrats. So my Democrats in the room, even though like you're like, yeah, we won. You're like, but I don't know. I don't know how this is going to look. My Republicans, you're like, we lost. And I can see that. Every group showed a negative except one. And that one was weekly church attenders. They reported a +4 for mental health, saying, actually, this was a tough year, but I still have some perspective on who God is in this. I still have a perspective of who I am and what he's called me to do and who he's called me to be. What I want to make sure in the room is that you know what I'm not saying. I'm not saying you just go to church 4 times a week or 4 times a month and you're fine. And everything in your life is going to make sense and all the pieces are going to come together. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is that maybe the reason this year you've been looking for freedom from fear, from insecurity, or from loneliness, or from depression, or from anxiety, all these things, and you haven't found the answer is because you never took a look at the baby who was born on Christmas Day. There's a guy named Paul who wrote a couple letters to this other pastor named Timothy. And in 2 Timothy in the Bible, Paul said to Timothy, the type of spirit that God gives us when we place our faith in Jesus. And he said, God has not given us a spirit of fear. In fact, God has given us a spirit of power, love, and self-discipline. Or some versions would say, and a sound mind. And the beautiful thing in that is that Paul was saying, no, you place your faith in Jesus. It's not just that you're free from fear. God also provides you something new. He gives you power, love, and self-discipline. The power, love, and self-discipline to actually respond to things that actually would cause fear in other people. That you actually have the ability to be a light in a dark place. You have an ability to make a difference because God is actually giving you everything you need for godly living. He didn't just leave you alone. He didn't just rescue you from sin, but he brought you freedom from fear. The writer continues, "We also know that the Son did not come to help angels. He came to help the descendants of Abraham, people," which is a really good thing. Like, Jesus was in heaven for eternity past. He could have just been like, you know what, I'm going to make life more cushy for the angels. But he didn't. He chose to help us out even when there was no benefit to him. Therefore, it was necessary for him to be made in every respect like us, his brothers and sisters, so that he could be our merciful and faithful high priest before God. Then he could offer a sacrifice that would take away the sins of the people. Priests back then, and honestly, priests today, maybe you grew up in kind of a Catholic background, the idea is that they'd be kind of this go-between between mankind and God. And so maybe you grew up Catholic and you practice kind of confessing to a priest who then would put in a good word with the big guy type idea. You're just kind of hoping that something's going to help you out on the other side. But what this is saying is that Jesus actually came to be the high priest, that we don't have to go between anybody else to know what God actually thinks of us. We don't have to wait for somebody else to tell us. We can actually know, and we have direct access to the Father thanks to the Son, thanks to Jesus. Since he himself has gone through suffering and testing, he is able to help us when we are being tested. That we don't have a God who just can't relate. Like, God, please help me out. And he goes, well, I've never sinned or I've never struggled with pain or never gone through this. He actually sees the effects of sin, sees the effects of pain. He knows everything that you've gone through, and he can actually relate to those things. It's not a distant God. And this is the last thing that Jesus provides us thanks to his life. If Jesus had never been born, we would have had no access to God. That Jesus' life, death, and resurrection says everything we need to know about who God is. Jesus lived a life. I think that's crazy. Like, he didn't just fix a sin problem. He didn't just come like, okay, I'm going to tweak the system a little bit. Okay, now I'm going to leave you alone for the rest of your life. You guys figure it out. No, he actually lived an entire life answering every possible question anybody could possibly have about who God is, what he thinks of them, and how much value they have in his eyes. And then he died on a cross to show two things. First, just how seriously he takes sin. That he looks at this and he goes, this ruins the picture that I originally intended for you. This ruins the picture that when you look at yourself, you struggle to find maybe some value. And he goes, I never wanted you to ever look at yourself that way because I see you like this. I see you through the righteousness that Christ bought you on that cross. And the second thing that his death actually showed was just how much value God places on us. That it's not just a favor he did for things that he looks at way beneath him. He goes, no, I bring you into my home, that you're now a child of God. And him rising from the dead was meant to prove that he is greater than evil, that light is greater than darkness, that hope is greater than despair, and whatever place you're finding yourself at the end of a very difficult year, the story is not over until God says it's over. The story is not over until God puts a period there. The story is not over until God says, amen, it is finished. I want you to bow your heads, close your eyes. Dear God, I thank you for who you are. I thank you for the reality that you've given us so much. You've given us rescue from sin. You've given us freedom from fear. But most importantly, you've given us access to you. Maybe you're in this room and you would really like that rescue from fear because there's some things in your life that you know you keep on doing, habits that you have or outbursts that you have, and you know you just keep on, like, it's self-sabotage. You go, I don't want to do this anymore. I want a rescue from myself. Or maybe you're in this room and you're going, I would love that freedom from fear. I would love to experience a little freedom from the anxiety or the loneliness that keeps me up at night. I want that. But can I just say this? You don't get those unless you have that access to God. And if you deeply want those, Jesus has given you all three. And so maybe you've been looking in every spot in your life to find a little bit of fulfillment, when maybe the whole time you've just been avoiding looking at the baby that was born on Christmas. And that he's here desiring a relationship with you, and he put every single piece into play so that you could know him. So if that's where you're at, I just simply want you to know this. Jesus lived a perfect life so that you could know what it could look like if somebody were to live their entire life in connection with God. He died on a cross for our sin. And then he rose from the dead to conquer the power of sin and death, so your life doesn't have to be narrated by that, by the dirt anymore. That it could be set free and you could see how God sees you and how God sees your neighbor. If you want that access to God, you want that freedom from fear, you want that rescue from sin, I simply want you to say this in the quietness of this moment. Jesus, I give you my life. I give you my life. If you prayed that prayer, what I want you to do is I simply want you to, we have a number that's going to be on the screen. I just want you to text the words "all in" to that number. I believe that church is a team sport, but I also believe that life is a team sport. And we want to make sure that this holiday season, as you're starting up your relationship with God, that you're not doing that alone, that we're all doing that together. Jesus was called the light of the world in Scripture. And actually, not only was he called the light of the world, John 1 said that he came to bring life and light to other people. And then when Jesus spoke to his followers, he said that they were going to be a light to the world, and he challenged them not to allow anything to cover or dim that light. And so what we're going to do tonight is we're actually going to do a candle lighting. But what this candle lighting represents is it represents the moment that Jesus sparked hope for humanity, that he was that original light source. And when you get that candle lit, it's a reminder to you that Jesus started this in the good work that generation after generation after generation after generation ensured would happen for you, so that the gospel would reach you one day. And then what I'm going to ask you to do is light the person's candle next to you. And that is to be a reminder to you that there are people in your life that need that same light that somebody made sure you got as well. We're going to end with just one more song.